rocking edition of Radio Otherwhere, coming to you now for 2 hours every week and broadcasting online and direct from Otherwhere HQ in Melbourne, Australia via bbsradio.com and the World Wide Web. Greetings to all those listening in all the world's different time zones, and no matter what time of day or night it is with you, I'm so glad that you're here. I'm Liz Miller, and this week we'll seek out all that is delightful, de-lovely, and indeed de-groovy about honing your intuitive skills for healing yourself and others with our guest, the founder of Intuition Medicine, Dr. Francesca McCartney. We'll also find out about the keys to the Arcturians as we catch up briefly with graphic designer Janosz, who creates stunning artwork with sacred geometry. So if you'd like to know more about what a medical intuitive sees when they look at the human body, how we can tune into our chakras or ground our energy, or if you're fascinated with crop circles, would like to know the Arcturians might be connected to them, and what they might be trying to tell us, you do not want to miss this show. But first, a roundup of some of the news of the week. One of the latest journal entries from Whitley Strieber's wife Anne at unknowncountry.com is really worth mentioning, as she writes about how she recently put Dr. Gary Schwartz in the lab at the University of Arizona in Tucson with the gifted Australian psychic Glynis McKay. Dr. Schwartz is the same doctor who conducted 4 years of research on the real Alison Dubois, the medium played by Patricia Arquette on the television show Medium, which is one of my favourite shows. Participating with them in this session as an unseen sitter, or, as they say in remote viewing, a blind target, was Dr. Lynn Katai of the Phoenix Lights case. Well, something rather unexpected and amazing happened in that session. Glynis reported that a man had shown up during the reading and described someone who sounded unmistakably like the late Harvard psychologist and renowned UFO investigator, Dr. John Mack, who died tragically last year in a car crash. Although Anne Strieber doesn't divulge the message itself, she does go on to say that it has something to do with a connection between the close encounter experience and spirit contact. About the message, she writes, it was very complex and involved not just Dr. Mack, but two other scientists on the other side, one of whom was another UFO researcher, Bill Mellow, both of whom knew Whitley. It involves whether the visitors might have, in effect, a science of all that they have used to become involved with our spirit world. Later, Dr. Schwartz told everybody that he wasn't surprised that Dr. Mack had shown up at all, as prior to the event, and without telling anyone else, he had sent out a call and asked him to come. To keep up with this story, go to unknowncountry.com and click on Anne's diary. Now, have you ever heard the expression, as above, so below? A giant double helix nebula has been spotted in space. This story from space.com. NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope has observed magnetic forces at the center of the galaxy, which have twisted a nebula into the shape of DNA, and they're calling it the DNA Nebula. It is about 80 light-years long and about 300 light-years from the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way. The double helix shape is commonly seen among living organisms, but this is the first time it has been observed in the cosmos. The study's lead author, Mark Morris of UCLA, says nobody has ever seen anything like that before in the cosmic realm. Most nebula are either spiral galaxies full of stars or formless, amorphous conglomerations of dust and gas, space weather. What we see indicates a high degree of order. And from cosmic DNA to nanoscale DNA, here's a story from New Scientist. A new technique for manipulating molecules dubbed DNA origami has been used for creating a map of the Americas measuring just a few hundred nanometers across out of meticulously folded strands of DNA. The scale map, which sketches out both North and South America at a staggering 200 trillionths of their actual size, aims to demonstrate the precision and complexity with which DNA can be manipulated using the approach. Although they've only made 2D shapes so far, they say there is nothing to prevent the technique from being applied to make complex 3D structures in the future. And in further nanotechnology news, it's looking as though nanotechnology may repair damaged brains. So for all of you out there who wish that you could go and get your brain fixed on a Monday morning after a big weekend, maybe here is the answer. Bioengineers and neuroscientists at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have restored the vision with nanotechnology to some rodents blinded by brain damage. And this is great news for the blind, of course, as the findings provide evidence that similar strategies might someday work in humans. The findings appear online this week in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And now, as many of you know, I'm very interested in stories about indigo kids because, quite frankly, they're here to save the world. And when the adults around them start to recognize that although they may fight against institutions and old paradigms and can sometimes be seen as troublemakers, when supported and encouraged in the right way, these kids can often reveal a hidden genius and find really innovative ways of doing things. And although this story comes from CBS News and they don't mention anything to do with indigos, I get the feeling that that's what these kids are in this story. They were typically bored and troubled at school and ended up at the auto shop program at West Philadelphia High School, a school with a high number of high school dropouts and where the kids weren't exactly the cream of the academic crop. But once they were given a task that they were actually interested in and that would do something good for the environment in the process, their genius came right to the fore. And they've done something that Ford, Toyota, Honda, and all the largest manufacturers of cars could not do. They brought the star attraction to the Philadelphia Auto Show, which was on recently. It was a soybean oil-driven sports economy car, and it can go from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds and can get more than 50 miles to the gallon. So who do we have to thank for it? Victor, David, Bruce, Cozzy, and Cheeseborough, 5 kids who, along with a handful of their schoolmates, built the soybean-fueled car as an after-school project. It took them more than a year, rummaging for parts, configuring wires, and learning as they went, but they did it. One of the Fab Five, Carmen, was in a gang at his old school, and he was a terrible student. And like many other indigo kids who have very similar stories, this project has changed all that. I was just getting by with the skin of my teeth, C's and D's, he says. I came here and now I'm a straight A student. Great story. And now, what about this one? If we didn't already have to watch out for the toxins in our food, air and the water that comes out of our taps, according to an article in the UK's Daily Mail, there's poison lurking in your plastic water bottle too. A potentially deadly toxin is being absorbed into bottled mineral water from their plastic containers, and the longer the water is stored, the levels of poison increase, research reveals. The research by world expert Dr. William Schottick, who has vowed never to drink bottled water again, will be published in the Society of Chemistry's journal next month. It is sure to revive concerns about the safety of bottled water, the world's fastest growing drinks industry, worth around $3 billion a year. The tests found traces of antimony, a chemical used in the making of PET bottles used by most mineral water sellers. Small doses of antimony can make you feel ill and depressed. Larger quantities can cause violent vomiting and even death. So maybe it's time to start switching to glass bottles wherever possible, or get a flask that you can carry around with you. And how crazy has the weather been? Here in Melbourne, we're enjoying a gentle beginning to autumn, I'm very glad to say. And so far, the only extreme weather I've seen is a bit of hail for about 5 minutes the other day. But it's been absolutely bizarre in so many other places. Russia is red, apparently, after a freak fall of coloured snow. Northern regions, Russia's maritime territory, have been blanketed by a creamy, reddish snow, caused by a combination of weather patterns. Authorities have been broadcasting non-stop weather bulletins to explain the phenomena and are saying that it's due to natural causes after panicked locals bombarded police and emergency services. Meteorologists have explained sandstorms from neighbouring Mongolia at a and the red snow comes just after weeks after yellow snow, caused by pollution from an oil and gas factory, which fell on Russia's far east island of Sakhalin. So far, there has been red and yellow snow in Russia, yellow snow in South Korea, chocolate brown snow in Arizona, a rust sandstorm and a saffron yellow sandstorm in China. Malawi has been flooded, leaving thousands homeless. Record snowfalls have covered certain parts of North America and Scotland. More than 100 tornadoes have been reported already in the US at the beginning of the tornado season. There have been an escalation in earthquakes. And Canada records a warm, un-Canadian winter. And with such upheaval, with our climate taking place, and so many people being dislocated from their homes, I thought I'd take this opportunity to remind everyone out there of the power of prayer to help send healing and restore balance in areas around the world that really need it. And I'd love for you all to go and check out www.globalpeaceprayer.com, a site with some excellent information and links to scientific studies and publications that have done research into consciousness and the power of prayer. They say that the power of prayer has been known for thousands of years. Recent scientific experiments have proven it. Experiments show that when people pray together at the same time, it has even more impact. Science has also discovered there is a special time of day when we are most receptive to spiritual and intuitive messages. This is probably the most powerful time to pray. You can go to their site to check out a graph for the best time to pray, as it varies during different times of the year. But if you're a night owl, then right now the time will work very well for you, because for the next few weeks, the optimum time to pray everywhere around the world is at your local time, 1 a.m. If everyone around the world would pray at this time, the prayers can have heightened impact, both because of the time of day and because many people are praying together. 15 minutes of concentrated prayer every day at this time can work miracles. The people at globalpeaceprayer.com propose that the prayer be for world peace, forgiveness of others, healing of Mother Earth, and the awakening of love for our fellow man. This follows the lessons of the great teachers of all religions, and I highly encourage you to be doing it. I will be, so why don't you join me too? If you'd like to find the links to these news articles and more, you can do so by going to my blog at www.otherwhere.blogspot.com or follow the Otherwhere links from the bbsradio.com homepage. You can also become a member of the Otherwhere Network, which is on the web at groups.yahoo.com/group/otherwhere, and all are welcome to join. If you're heading to Miami or you're in Miami at this time of year, you will probably know that it's time for the annual Winter Music Conference, which has almost taken on Mecca status for some in the dance music industry. You can tell by the number of DJs, record producers, music writers, label bosses, club owners, promoters, and assorted hangers-on that fill every bar and nightclub and literally swarm the streets for a week, toting bags of music everywhere they go. I've been to one before, and they are a ton of fun, especially as it's the place where some of the biggest tracks of the moment are aired for the first time by producers who've been saving them just for Miami. Here's a brand new release from Sunshine Jones, former member of San Francisco Deep House outfit Dub Tribe Sound System, from a WMC 2006 promo sampler from King Street Sounds called I Believe. Graphic designer Janosch and Camille van Gerstel, tour coordinator for the Arcturian Activations, a multimedia presentation of Janosch's art with sacred geometry and music that is currently touring Australia and visiting Adelaide, Hobart, Sydney and Melbourne before heading off to take this to the UK, Canada and even the UN in New York later this year. To describe their show, they say that the Arcturian art, visioned by Janosch, will lead you through an intensive inner journey on the wings of the crop circle energies of the Arcturians, who are multidimensional beings that exist like spirits in a higher frequency or a dimension, not visible for us humans. In that dimension, there are a team of beings called the Circle Makers, who communicate with Janosch. He sees holograms of light and then makes graphic representations of what he has seen, many of which are identical to many crop circle patterns, and it is truly beautiful to see them through his eyes. The wisdom in these codes is there to stimulate and awaken us. Many of these codes contain complicated shapes known as sacred geometry, and this mode of communication is chosen because it surpasses all different languages. Sacred geometry resonates with all cultures in this world, no matter what language is used. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome first up Camille to Otherwhere and bbsradio.com.
Hi.
Hello, Liz. Good afternoon.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. I'm so excited about what you're bringing to the audiences here in Australia and later on to the rest of the world. Could you please tell us what we can expect to see at your shows, what your involvement is, and why are they called activations?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for a wonderful introduction. I think you explained the audience briefly already what it is. It's an experience where Janusz is taking you on an inner journey, basically, with lots of scientific background information on why sacred geometry has such a profound and deep emotional effect on us. So people feel things, but they also like to understand why they feel certain things. And the activations will give you an opportunity to just understand that part of it. And as for my part in this story, I'm basically just a lucky guy representing Janusz for international affairs. What the geometry does, it awakens information in us that's already stored inside of us. So you know that we know everything already. We have all information stored inside of us, but it's sleeping. So basically what we need to do is remember that it's there, and that's what the geometry does with us, and that's why we call it activations.
And so far, you've been to Adelaide in Australia. What has the response been like?
It has been really, really wonderful. Yeah, we had a very warm welcome in Adelaide. Like I said, people really didn't know what to expect. There was after they walked out the theatre, they were so thrilled calling everybody, trying to get them there in time for the next show, because we were only there for a few days. So it's been heartwarming.
I can't wait to talk to Janusz later about his artwork, because obviously that's the real highlight of the show. It's seeing his incredible interpretations of sacred geometry up there on the big screen. And yes. I believe that there's music along with the show.
Yes, that's correct.
Tell me what kind of a role the music plays.
Well, it's a very important part of music. As you know, everything that our senses register, it's vibration, it's frequency. So it's not just what we see, it's also what we hear. And the music kind of, how to say this, it kind of supports the images. Well, if I can speak from my own experience, there is a certain part in Activation Part 3 that I like very particularly. And every time I see it, I get touched on this emotional level, like I told you before. And once I try to close my eyes and see if it was just the music that touched me, and nothing really happened, then I close my ears and saw if it was just the images that touched me, but it was really the combination that did it. So it's a combination of frequencies that your senses registers.
Well, I think with that said, let's bring him on the line.
All right, I'll be happy to introduce him to you. Here's Janusz.
Thank you.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Janusz. It's fantastic to talk to you at last.
Well, thank you.
How are
I'm
you?
Very honored to speak to you.
Thank you so much. The first time I ever saw your art was probably in 2004, and it captivated me. There's just this diffuse light and a crystalline energy that permeates your work, and it brings a wonderful feeling to every sense when you look at it.
Because you recognize it, I think. It's all stored inside of you.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And your holographic interpretations of the crop circle designs, which you didn't even know before you designed them, that they were crop circle designs.
Yeah, that's true.
It helped me see those familiar images of the crop circles in a completely new way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how your work is connected to the crop circles and how you're incorporating all of that into these shows that you're bringing to Australia at the moment.
Okay, well, it started in November 2003. I saw these images just when I was a little bit of daydreaming, and I thought, this is doing something, and I was very surprised I saw them. And I made them on a computer, what I saw. And then I put it on the internet. I didn't know it were crop circles. So I put it on the internet because I made art before. And so I had a website with my art. And then I get reactions from people that they are crop circles. And I had nothing crop circles. I didn't believe in it at all. I thought they were all man-made. And so I was a little bit confused about it. But then Saeed, my guide, contacted me and explained me what was going on and what it does and how it works and what we can do with it. And Saeed is a guide from the Arcturians, and they are here on Earth to help a lot of people to grow to a higher consciousness. They say that time is going more quickly and we need to hurry up for the big change.
Wow. So how did you go from being someone who didn't believe in crop circles to then having a relationship with a guide?
It'll take some time.
It must
have. In the beginning you think I'm getting crazy. And then you start very carefully. I was very afraid to go out with this because I thought people will think I'm crazy. So you try very, very short moments you have and show people a few little things. And then I saw what happened. And then Saeed explained me to make a presentation and that the time of new gurus and masters is over, that everybody is their own master. And he said, so make a presentation that you are not a master. You're just somebody who makes art, that's all. So I started that, and then I did a tryout, and I didn't know what was going on and what would happen. And people start after the first presentation to call me and send me emails what happened in their life. And then I thought, okay, there is something going on. And so you grow in it. You grow, you know, you start very carefully and try out things. Yeah. And so it started. And then it went very quickly. When Saeed asked me, are you ready for this? And I said, yes. It was amazing what happened in my life. Suddenly all doors went open from a lot of counter reactions and goes so quickly. And that's also a thing I want to share with people. If you work with your heart and passion, the miracles are there.
It's a wonderful message to spread.
Yeah.
The website that you have is a wonderful website, and it's just gorgeous to look at. And one of the things that you have on the website are pages of the designs that you've done that have the similar, well, the identical crop circle actually in the field right next to it, and there's a message. Would you talk about those messages, please?
Yeah, it's a combination of the geometric shapes and the colors and the numbers of the circles. And that combination is a language, and it's a language that our unconscious, our subconscious, it's understanding. We don't understand it when we think about it, but our subconscious understands it. So it's a language. It has a lot to do with recognizing your own power, to recognize that you are a master. It has to do with our programs. We feel guilt, disappointed. It's all to do with a lot of programs. We are programmed. And how we can change this.
Well, thank you, Janosch. I can't wait to talk to you again when you come back to Melbourne.
Okay, hope to see you soon.
Okay, we will.
And have a wonderful day.
Thank you, I will.
Bye.
Hi, Camille. So let's just run through those tour dates and let people know how they can see the show.
All right. Well, it's showing in Hobart on next Tuesday and Wednesday. And then we'll be in Sydney from March 27th till March 30th. And then we're finishing off the tour in Melbourne at the Forum Theatre. And I think that's on Flinders Street, I think. And that's on from April 3rd till April 6th.
And how might people find out more information about the show? What's the website detail?
Well, the website is www.the-arcturians.com. But I believe there's also a link on your website at DBS Radio, if I'm correct.
There is.
I thought so. And there'll be lots more information also about how to buy tickets. Tickets can be bought through Ticketek. And there's two different sessions. It's a trilogy. The activation is made up in three parts. And the first night we'll be showing part one and two on one evening with a break in the middle. And then the second night will be part three. And people don't have to go to one and two first in order to see part three, but it's recommendable, though, because then you get the whole story.
Well, I can't wait to talk to you both when you arrive in Melbourne, and we'll get you into the studio and find out in some really good detail all about the Arcturians, the crop circles, and sacred geometry. Thank you again, Camille.
Thank you very much, and we're looking forward to seeing you.
Looking forward to seeing you, too.
If you like the sound of that and would like to see the show yourself, Janos has graciously given me 2 tickets for each show in Melbourne, Sydney and Hobart to give away, and they could be yours if you know the answer to this question. What is the name of the star system the Arcturians originate from? Call right now on 1-888-268-4313 to score your ticks. It would normally cost you $99 to attend all 3 activations, but not if you're a listener to this show and you're in Australia. So get on the phones and I'll announce the winners next week. Fingers crossed someone's listening in Tassie. Once again, the website for Janos is www.the-arcturians.com. And an out for Janos in the coming weeks, as I'll be bringing him back for a full-length interview. And now let's get into this deep house groove. Coming out on Monday, let's have a listen to a promo of the sub-level edit from legendary DJ Doc Martin of Lee's Back to Zanzibar. The bass line on this is like the groove that just won't stop. Perfect for those late night sessions, just like this. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Otherwhere, and that is anything that activates, enhances, or evolves the inner technologies of the multidimensional human.
on the line.
Yes, we are indeed online, and I hope you are really comfortable because you're in for a treat. Our next guest is a medical doctor that can see auras. She holds a PhD in energy medicine and intuition medicine, and has worked in the field of intuition medicine for 30 years. She has a Bachelor of Science degree from Greenwich University, Australia, studied Ayurvedic medicine, bark flower remedies, homeopathy, kinesiology, natural therapy and radionics at the Academy of Eastern Medicine in California, and she has a couple of Montessori teaching diplomas and holds a position as a pastoral counselor at the Church of Divine Man in Berkeley, California. We're going to be talking about the intuitive wisdom that resides in all of us and how we can tap into this innate intelligence to live a more whole and balanced life. Francesca McCartney, PhD, has taken her vast experience as a teacher and practitioner of intuition medicine and crafted a comprehensive book to teach both beginners and advanced students how to access this wisdom and become more self-aware and healthy in body, mind and spirit. Her book, Body of Health, introduces the essential skills needed to access intuitive intelligence and assists readers in cultivating them by providing valuable self-assessment tools, balancing conceptual dialogue with real-life examples and practical exercises. Dr. McCartney has explored various aspects of intuition medicine, including meditation, affirmations, the subtle human energy system, chakras, auras and color healing. This unique book bridges the gap between scientific thought and the new science of intuition medicine that will serve as a fabulous map for those on the journey to wholeness. And she's with us on the phone right now. She is a resident of Mill Valley, California, and I'd like to welcome her to the digital airwaves of bbsradio.com. Hello and welcome, Francesca. It's great to have you with us.
Hello, Liz. I'm very happy to be here speaking with you.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be speaking to you too, because really, when you think about the idea behind the name of my show, which is Otherware, and how it discusses the inner technologies of the multidimensional human, well, your book, Body of Health, perfectly fits the whole concept for this show. And I'm really looking forward to discussing some of the concepts and ideas in the book and, of course, some of the practical techniques that people might be able to apply in their own lives to help give them an in to a way that the ancients used to use to perceive reality beyond their five sense reality.
Yes, I like to use a phrase that my friend Dr. Larry Dossey used in one of his books called Reinvent Ancient Medicine. And I believe that much of what I present in my book and in my work is based on knowledge and wisdom from ancient indigenous people, and that is being reinvented by myself and other people and brought forth to people at the time. And I've found that many times people, when they start hearing about intuition medicine or energy medicine, begin to remember from within themselves some ancient origins of already understanding, knowing, feeling, and sensing this information.
Actually, he mentions in the intro to your book, or he provides a testimonial for your book and says that intuition is our birthright. I truly believe that that's the case as well, and that all of us have the ability to access our intuitive abilities. Do you think that's true?
I do, and I have seen it for the past 30 years in educating people to get in touch with their intuition. I come from a focus where I've observed and I believe that, and I've seen demonstrated in thousands of people, that intuition is an innate human sense. It's one of our natural human senses. And for most societies, mostly our Western-based societies, intuition is given very little credence, as is inspiration. And so it is not taken seriously by our educational system, by a mainstream health, by the media, and therefore it is not part of our language. So in my work, what I feel like I'm doing much of the time is teaching a language. I'm teaching an ancient language that once it becomes a part of a person's sense, then that language is recalled and remembered, and it's easily spoken.
Is that the language of the soul?
Intuition is a spiritual-based language. It is not necessarily physical-based, although it comes through physical body. It's an energy-based or a spiritual-based. I use the word energy and spirit interchangeably because both are the unseen forces that affect us within and without. So yes, I would define it as a spiritual-based type of language.
Well, let's talk a little more deeply about exactly what a medical intuitive is. I believe that you coined the term initially. How long ago was that?
Well, actually, I did not coin the term. I borrowed it from Dr. Norm Shealy, who actually is a colleague of mine. He coined it in the 80s. I think it was around 1984 when he was training a person called Carolyn Mace. And he came upon the term medical intuitive. Interestingly enough, I had been occupied in a career in the early 70s. And for most of the 70s in a medical clinic, it was called Academy of Eastern Medicine, where all kinds of alternative healthcare as well as allopathic healthcare was given to clinic patients. And I was there in the capacity of being a meditation instructor as well as a medical intuitive, but that term hadn't been coined in the 70s. So I was called stress reduction therapist. That was the term that was used then, and meditation instructor. So during my meditation groups with the clinic patients, I would actually teach them how to work with their chakra system, their energy body, and so on. And with some of the clinic patients that the physician saw would be more open to me doing energetic diagnostics, I would sit with them and I would do a scan on their physical and their energetic bodies and go through a health diagnostic with them.
And now, by using the word scan, we're not talking about scanning with any type of equipment here, are we?
No.
What kind of equipment are you using?
Well, you know, bodies are wired, truly wired, hardwired, to be able to use scanning energetic systems through various intuitive skills, such as clairvoyance, which means a visual experience of subtle energy, much like an X-ray machine, or clairsentience, which is using the physical body in an empathetic way to feel in, like when I do a clairsentience scan, I feel in my body what the patient's body is feeling, and it's sort of like sonar radar.
Right. So if someone had a sore foot, you'd be able to feel that in your foot.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
What are the other types of clairvoyance?
Well, clairvoyance means to not use ocular vision, but an inner sight, a subtle sense of a vision, whereby you can look at a physical body or physical objects, or go out in nature and look at trees and such and perceive the subtle vibratory field that is within and surrounding that living tree or that living person. And these subtle energy vibrations take on color, pattern. If you're clairaudient, you could hear the sound or the tone or the resonance of them. If you are clairsentient, you can feel the vibratory pulse and movement of the subtle part of dense matter. So that's another way to use clairvoyance.
So let's talk a little bit about how your own journey from working in the 70s in a clinic led you to discovering all of these different types of clairvoyant faculties that one might have, and how then you were able to develop your own work?
Well, I view myself as a professional observer of human nature and human conscious, and I'm really devoted to educating people in one's own ability to expand human consciousness and be more than they are spiritually, physically, emotionally, and mentally. And in the clinic, as I worked with patients as they came in, I began to observe the commonalities in people's energy systems, in their spiritual bodies, and began to cross-reference the similar things that I saw, I perceived, I intuited, I scanned in all these bodies, and amassed quite a large amount of information on the energy physiology or the spiritual anatomy of human beings. And in that, I created a program whereby I could communicate to other people how I was scanning and diagnosing and then moving into energy-based healing. And then from that, I began to develop a curriculum to teach other people. Actually, I had private clients who, after working with me for a couple of years, said, "You've got to teach me how to do this myself." And so from that, from all the information I had been amassing, and I studied other cross-reference healing modalities other than spiritual-based and energy-based. And so I cross-referenced everything and created a curriculum whereby I could educate interested people in being able to heal themselves, to scan themselves, and so on.
It sounds like very fulfilling work, especially when you have now been able to form an academy, the Academy of Intuition Medicine. And how many people do you think you've trained nowadays?
Well, I informally trained people during the 70s, and then in 1984, I founded the academy in Sausalito. Well, first in Mill Valley, and then we moved to Sausalito. And gosh, you know, just the other day I was talking to a colleague, and we were both talking about she's been in this work for many years as well. How many patients or clients or students that we trained over the years, and I've been in this career full time for 30 years. And I, you know, honestly, I would say probably about 10,000 people have, you know, walked into my sphere to be educated or consulted or healed.
That's quite a number of people. Congratulations. That's pretty amazing work. Where did it all begin as a child for you? Because I assume that you must have started to see things when you were a young girl.
I grew up in a family, an ethnic European family, where my mother, my grandmother, my cousins, you know, most of my family were open to other worlds, to the unseen worlds. And my grandmother, for instance, would talk about dead relatives that she saw walking through the house. And many of us had same or similar experiences. So it was a language that was spoken throughout my family. And work and included as part of our natural cultural history. So as I matured and realized that this language of energy, speaking about other worlds, was not a part of most of Western society, then I found ways where I could connect with, learn, educate myself in a more Western way to speak the an other world language, the unseen world language, using Western terms and Western language so that I could interface more easily with a larger body of people.
Do you think that you or your family was wired differently, or that there was something genetically that allowed these experiences to be part of your childhood and part of your growing up, that perhaps other children or other families don't have or don't activate until perhaps through very consistent work on themselves, for example?
The short answer is yes, and I'll give you the long answer. I have been researching that because that's a big question for me. And in my research, I have actually discovered that there is a genetic quality in particular families that passes on, and I'm talking about biological genetic factors that pass on from generation to generation, which do create a stronger open wiring in the physiology, which allows the subtle energies to be observed and experienced. Now, for example, in my chapter on color, when I did research on that, much to my delight, I discovered a great deal of information that wasn't related to energy seeing, color seeing, but was related to genetic dispositions of people who had been tested in saying that they could see subtle light around other people, auras in the language that we would speak, and that there is a gene, an extra tetrachromatic gene in our visual apparatus. I think it's in the somewhere in our eyeballs. That if you have that extra gene, then people who have clairvoyance almost always, when tested, have that extra gene, which gives them the ability to more easily see subtle color and subtle light around other people.
And that's fascinating. So is this the very first time that anything physical has actually been able to be discovered in our genetic sequence that would predispose someone to having these experiences?
That was a seminal piece.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
and then
so
I've
wonderful.
Talked to other colleagues who have had clairvoyance their entire life, and they've said to me, well, you know, my mother had it, my sister has it, and so that kind of piqued my interest and curiosity that, yeah, okay, so I've read it in research papers, colleagues have also verified it, so it is something that is, it is there, it's hardwired. But I also believe it can be developed.
Yes, yes. Well, that leads to ask, I have to ask you about the new children, the indigos and the crystals, that it sounds as though a lot of research is going on into their genetics at the moment, and some amazing discoveries have been found. Have you heard much about some of the latest research into some of these children?
Oh, certainly. I read the books, The Indigo Children and Raising a Spirited Child, when they first came out. And, in fact, last weekend here in my hometown, there was a preview of the latest Indigo Child movie, and it was actually the documentary on how they made the movie Indigo Children. And I brought my two teenage daughters, who were completely fascinated with it, felt really validated by hearing all of these Indigo children describing their extraordinary abilities and so on. Much of the children who are labeled as being Indigo children are children who fall in the category of having the genetic predisposition, but also I think they just simply come into the physical body as spirits determined to bring in more light and more awareness of the other world, the spiritual realms, and with that intention as spirits, I observe that they morph the physiology so that their body and their genetic system will go through a morphological change to adapt to a higher sensitivity and bring in these abilities.
Wow. Drumbelow Melchizedek has had an article being circulated around the internet for probably the better part of the last 8 months discussing some research into the ability that some of these children are displaying of being impervious to disease. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. I haven't seen the article. Maybe you could forward it to
me. I will. Apparently.
Well, what's your take on it?
Well, It's very hard to know because I've not seen any other information to back up what this article is saying. And I haven't heard any further interviews with Drumvalo to find out what exactly is going on. But according to the interview, some cells from some of these children were put into a petri dish with some HIV cells. And the cells from the children were completely impervious to being infected by those HIV cells. And it sounded to me like it was possible, more than possible, considering what some of their abilities are in other areas.
Okay, that gives me an idea of what's going on. You know, that type of research is so, if it's just a one-time research, very insular.
Yeah.
And you really have to have it replicated numerous times in order to get some very fact-based information. But I actually do know a lot about putting cells in petri dishes and doing energy based work or praying on them or doing,
yes,
you know, sending Reiki energy. One of my advisory board members does actually that very specific research with HIV cells in petri dishes, has a huge lab which is being government-funded, National Institute of Health-funded research in San Francisco at a hospital. And I've visited him numerous times. I'm really interested in that. And there's so many different factors that affect HIV cells and, you know, other cells that have cancer that you can't say, you can't take one research and say, well, the cells of indigo children cannot be affected by HIV cells, because there are other cells in the human body that when you put them in a petri dish with HIV cells are also not affected by HIV cells.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's,
so there's, too,
yeah,
you know, there's way too many factors to say, oh, yeah, this is great information.
Right.
This has got to be valid.
Yeah.
Well, you have to look at all the other HIV cells and petri dishes research that's going on, and, you know, there is some of it going on.
Let's talk some more about Body of Health itself, because I've found this book to be very, very helpful personally. The exercises with grounding particularly. I must mention that a couple of weeks ago we ended the show with one of the exercises from the book. And
oh, lovely.
Yes, so thank you very, very much. So, the audience has already been working with you in a way. And I've found that the information that's presented in the book has been presented in such a clear and concise way. It would really be beneficial to anybody, even someone who hasn't had any experience with this information before, because the way that it's presented is just beautiful. You back up all your medical information with notes at the back. There's a wonderful index. And there's also charts and really helpful tables of information that help you work out things like whether you're grounded or ungrounded, whether your chakras need to be dialed down or opened up, the way that color works with healing. And they're very easy to find in the book and use. Like in 10 seconds, you can go to one of those tables and go, oh, right, I know what to do. So thank you so much for producing such a clear book.
Oh, I'm so happy
book.
To hear this. Yeah, I actually wrote the book so it would be user-friendly for everybody, even
is,
someone who had
yeah.
never read a book about energy or spiritual healing or so on. And the information in the book, most of those charts, which, as you say, they're voluminous, are taken from real people.
Mm.
I did not create those of my own personal experience. I did questionnaires and collected, you know, as you can see, I like to document stuff, you know, documents and questionnaires from years of people and many, many students, and compiled those lists from what people have told me. This is how grounding feels to me, or this is how it feels when my chakra is out of balance, or this is how it feels when my chakra is in balance. So it's really human-based information that's put together in that book.
There's some great sections in the book as well, throughout the chapters, where you use certain words and then you find those same words throughout different cultures and different times. Life force, for example, we all know the Chinese use the word qi. the yogis like to use the word prana. But then you go right into, you know, what Hippocrates would have used, which would have been vis medicatrix naturae. Jung uses the word synchronicity. The vitalists use the word life force. I think it's really important that you've done this because it gives people a much clearer idea that these concepts and terms haven't just been used in the metaphysical community or the New Age community or the medical community. They've really spanned thousands of years and many cultures, haven't they?
It's ancient wisdom, as you and I began our talk with. It's ancient wisdom. And it has been passed down through all the ages, all the cultures. Every culture on the planet has words and symbols that describe what we now call the New Age system of belief or healing. Every indigenous culture has references to what we are calling New Age terminologies. And, you know, you just need to do the research on it and say, this isn't new. This is reinvented wisdom.
Why do you think that this is the time when this wisdom is being refound, reintegrated into our lifestyles?
I think there are enough of us who feel a passion and a drive to communicate to a larger audience this belief system, our way of seeing the world as much more than just physical reality. And I think that historically that has happened in waves over, you know, many cultures and many civilizations and so on. And I just think that we're in a way repeating a cultural peak where this is the time that we as a group of people are coming forth and saying we need to include spirituality and the unseen world and the other world in our view of reality. And, you know, the really fascinating thing for me is if you are watching what is being done in the hard sciences, in astronomy, for example, in quantum physics, biology, there is so much more research coming from those didactic sciences beginning to parallel what energy scientists are saying. That it sounds like if you pick up a science magazine, mostly New Scientist magazine, it sounds like you're reading a metaphysical tract.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, fascinating. So I think there's a convergence that is happening now.
It's been a convergence that I personally have been waiting for it seems like my whole life, and I'm so glad to still be a reasonably young woman and to see it finally happening. And the way that science is now openly embracing, in some quarters, not all, I'm sure, but in some quarters, it's openly embracing that ancient wisdom and, in fact, going back to it. Greg Braden is a wonderful example of how he uses the information from, you know, cellular biology and quantum physics and then relates that to ancient texts from the Essenes and from the Nag Hammadi Library, where the language is completely different, but they're saying exactly the same thing.
Yes, it's shifting perspective.
Yes.
Where are you looking at the information from? What perspective?
Yeah.
And I think that people like you and I are doing is we're shifting perspective. We're saying, don't throw all the information out. Just move a little bit to the right or the left or a little bit above and below and read it from that vantage point.
Yeah.
And what that does is it actually shifts perceptions physiologically and in your brain and activates different centers of wisdom-based knowledge rather than rational linear knowledge so that more information comes into your body and your mind that can be integrated on and into the subtle body and the subtle spiritual awareness.
BBS Radio.com. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Otherwhere with guest medical intuitive and founder of the Academy of Intuition Medicine in California, Dr. Francesca McCartney, and myself, Liz Miller. Hope you're enjoying the show. There from Lenny Fontana, the Reconstruction Breakdown mix of Myra's Come to Me. Now let's get back to our conversation with Dr. McCartney, founder of the Academy of Intuition Medicine. Want to know how you can live at your highest frequency? When Otherwhere returns, we'll find out.
On the line. It seems to me that one of the most important messages that you're trying to get across with your book is that intuitive exploration of yourself and of others, if you care to, is really good for you. And you have three essential methods for accessing higher intelligence that I think are really great steps in being able to achieve that. The first one is diagnosis. The second one is clearing and balancing. And the third one is protection. So would you go into explaining, firstly, diagnosis?
Okay. In my model of intuition medicine, maybe if I can back up just a little bit, as we're talking about intuition medicine, which is a coined term that I created and refers to the system of energy work that I teach. Yintun medicine is a subset specialty or modality within the branch of energy medicine. And energy medicine is a big umbrella term that includes subtle energy practices, like acupuncture, reflexology, homeopathy, and so on. So intuition medicine falls under the umbrella of energy medicine. So in my model of energy medicine, when I train people to heal themselves and to heal other people, in my book, I don't go into how to heal another person. I'm saving for another book because I believe a person, if they need to heal themselves first, yeah. It's really physician heal thyself. So in assessing higher intelligence or spiritual awareness in oneself, the practice training that I put forth is you need to sit in contemplation in quiet time and observe yourself. And observe your inner workings, your outer workings, the way your energy flows, the way you feel, and so on. And I have some, I think they're really clear models written out in the book, how to diagnose your major energy systems, your grounding system, your aura system, your chakra system, how to become aware of diagnosing how much life force energy you have, how much earth energy you have, and to use color as also a diagnostic tool in your contemplation and sense of self, in knowing if you are emitting, vibrating at healthy colors or unhealthy colors. So that after studying that or practicing that, you would use that formula to diagnose whether you are operating in a healthy, balanced way or you're in an unhealthy state and you need to do some clearing or cleansing. So the second step then is after you determine, for example, maybe you've just ended a love relationship and it's been a really hard and painful relationship. Typically, that affects your heart chakra, which is at your sternum, and your second chakra, which is at your navel. That's your sexual center. So typically, people in that kind of circumstance would do energy clearing, would clear out whatever pain or sensation or maybe images or feelings that you have in the heart center and the sexual center, which are obstructing your free flow of life force energy and vital energy. And after you cleanse and clear those feelings and sensations and colors out, that begins to allow you to bring in a balanced flow and a healthy flow of your life force earth energy, to do affirmations to bring a sense feeling of self-love and self-acceptance. And after you have gone through the balancing and the clearing, I find it's radically important that you then create a positive protection around yourself. So it's just like after injuring yourself, maybe cutting your skin, one doesn't walk around with the skin bleeding open. Even after the bleeding has stopped, you put a Band-Aid on.
That's right.
So that the cut has some protection while it's going through its repair process. So those are my diagnosis, clearing and balancing and protection steps in a nutshell.
I believe that you're a firm advocate of journaling and making sure that you keep a journal to write down experiences.
Yes. I advocate journaling because I have watched students who develop their intuition strongly over the years are the people who write stuff down. This is from my observation. And what I've also found is that when you are in your own reverie and you're having epiphanies and you're getting all this insight coming to you, usually comes pretty fast and pretty quick, that your mental, rational, linear mind isn't going to hold on to it and store it somewhere, because our rational mind has no compartments built for epiphanies or for that much for inspiration or intuition. So that if you scribble it down in a journal while you are having, or a minute or two after you have your revelation, your epiphany, your insight, then you've got a document that you can refer back to and say, oh, wow, when I was in meditation, I noticed in meditation that my heart chakra had a lot of angry red energy, and I saw an image of my old boyfriend in there. And, you know, you'll look at that, and that will give you a language and personal notes so that you can recall that, okay, this is a center that I need to do some work on, because this is what I now see when I did my diagnostic really needed to be cleared. And so in essence, what you're doing with journaling is you're creating your own language Bible.
And what do you think are the other steps that people really should integrate into their personal practices or their daily work that are as important or would help support the work of the journaling that you do?
Grounding, grounding, grounding. Making connection with the earth.
Why is it so important to be grounded?
It's a foundation of everything else. You can be a high-level clairvoyant. You can be an absolute 100% perfect empath that can diagnose everything, everyone, and yourself. But if you're not grounded, you're not going to be able to take it any further than having the experience. So if you want to integrate and then use that integrated wisdom to evolve and heal yourself and others, it needs to be securely integrated into your physical, spiritual, and mental bodies. And to do that, you need to bring it all the way down to the earth plane. And that's what grounding is all about, being an embodied, wise spirit in your physical body connected to the physical plane.
Have you got any stories from your own life when you weren't grounded and perhaps things went terribly wrong that you could share?
Well, one story comes to mind. I, years ago, was working with a client, and I really liked him. He had, his mother had just died, and he was having terrible stomach problems, and all I saw was his, as well as other people's grief, moving through his stomach, his intestines, and so on. And so I decided that I was feeling very, very clear that day. So I decided I would take his grief and sadness and run it through my physical body to alleviate him of those symptoms.
Yep.
Well, I did, and he left the session feeling perfectly happy and healthy. I got up, went into the bathroom, and started throwing up violently because, I wasn't grounded enough. And I actually wouldn't even advocate that even if you feel you're grounded that you do that. But my sympathy for his situation ungrounded me. And then taking his energy and running it through my ungrounded body gave me all those symptoms.
It's something that you hear a lot from people who work in this field and have to deal with other people's energy all the time. And you often hear about different healers working on the protection that they build around themselves before they even go into a session. And I know that grounding is part of that, but do you have any other techniques that you use personally to help protect you before you interact with somebody else's energy?
I think it's vitally important to respect the other person as a spirit and to listen to them as they're relating to you what's going on with them as their journey, and that it isn't your journey, and that you are there as a practitioner holding witness to their sacred journey. And you're listening, you're affirming for them, you're supporting them in whatever way you can, but you are not doing the journey for them. And in what I call that is spirit-to-spirit communication.
Yeah.
And I find that in and of itself is a great protection for the practitioner, because you are not energetically or dynamically involving yourself in another person's journey. However, you are holding a sacred space for them by, in a grounded way and in a spiritual way, witnessing their journey and affirming their transformative power to change and heal themselves. So spirit-to-spirit communication is what I call it.
Yes. I'd love to find out some more about the work itself that you've done, because over 30 years there must be so many incredible experiences that you've had and so many people who've benefited from your work in ways that perhaps you couldn't even predict or dream of before you began working with them. Would you mind sharing a couple of stories with us?
Well, a story that comes to mind is a woman who was diagnosed with hepatitis, the incurable type of hepatitis, and her doctors actually gave her a certain amount of time to clean up her affair, and she probably wouldn't live longer than these many months and so on. And she decided that she wasn't going to follow their diagnosis, that she was going to do something else. And this was a woman who had never done any kind of alternative healing, but she had run the gamut of all the medical help that was offered to her. So she found her way somehow, I can't remember, into the academy and into my class, and became a really devoted student of energy healing. And at one point, it was probably about a year into the training, she was sitting in a guided meditation class that I was conducting, and I saw this luminous light. I was leading students through a life force meditation. I saw this luminous light in her aura expand and move into her physical body, and to me it appeared as though it shifted her physical. Later she told me that, and she started crying at the end of that meditation, and then she left. She didn't talk to me, but later she told me that she had a strong epiphany during that meditation that her liver had healed, and she had been continuing to have medical tests, all that year. So on her next liver test, her hepatitis was completely gone, and the doctors just couldn't figure out what happened. So, you know, that was like a testimonial and just a wonderful affirmation of how energy can transform physical.
And it's wonderful to hear of your experience. You saw what you saw. You saw her reaction to it. She said nothing to you. She left. And then when she finally talked to you about it, she was able to confirm and validate everything that you'd seen. You both had a very similar experience.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most intriguing parts of this work, I think. It's when you really trust what you're picking up, and then you have the other person who you're working with, or if it's with yourself, you have some experience or some piece of information come to you to validate what you've perceived, to make you know that you're not crazy, you're not making things up, you're not just dreaming this, you're not imagining it. It's actually very, very real for both parties, or for you personally.
When you do energy work, it's not a logical or linear study. It's an energy-based paradigm, and it operates outside of the rational, linear box. So one must listen and experiment and communicate with others to build a new fabric to understand and hold that information. So this is really what we're talking about, is the knowing and accumulation of energy-based wisdom rather than linear rational wisdom. And in order to accumulate that kind of wisdom, you need to do it empirically and experientially in order to shift your consciousness. And this is what I feel I'm doing in educating people. I'm giving them a gift of wisdom-based healing.
The other thing about intuition medicine, which I love, is the fact that when you can work with it either through a practitioner or through your own abilities, you don't need to rely on drugs quite as much, or in some cases at all. And I think that's a huge revolution in terms of the way that we treat our health, don't you?
I do. And I have to say about the drugs, I don't know if you've been keeping current with all of the drug scandals that are going on and such.
Yes.
But there's been some wonderful research on the placebo effect, and people being given two groups, one group being given the drug the second group being given a placebo, which is, there's no drug, it's a little sugar pill. And that in almost all of the recent research that's been done, people who are given the sugar pill have the same health benefits as people who are given the chemically based medicine. So there is something that happens in our physiology which can be induced, self-induced, and which leads to health in the same way that we've been taught to believe or fed to believe that we need to take chemical-based drugs in order to make our body well. We have our own inner pharmacopoeia.
We certainly do. And I'd like to talk about that right now, because one of the things that you mentioned, or one of the exercises that you ask people to work with, is to visualize the part of their brain around the hypothalamus. And you call that the physical location of your inner meditation sanctuary. Would you discuss that a little bit for us, please?
Yes. From my own personal experience and observation of other people, my students, my clients, and so on, over many years, I've come to pretty strongly be able to say that when a person is in a deep contemplative state, in a state of accessing altered reality or super consciousness, whatever words you want to put on it, perception of the unseen world, that the location of the strongest point of their focused energy resides in that physical location around the hypothalamus gland. So taking that observation, I've applied it to training my students in meditation. Not to meditate from the center of the heart chakra, not to meditate from the center of the gut, not to meditate out of their body, but to focus as much of their awareness and attention in what I call the meditation sanctuary. Physically, it's the location around your hypothalamus gland, to seat oneself there and therefore activate that part of the brain, the whole endocrine system, and so on, and have had wonderful results. Positive, powerful results with my students, and being able then train them to get in touch with all the intuitive skills that I talk about and write about in my book. So I think location is everything. Where you place the location of your perception when you are developing your ability to use intuition.
And do you think that by asking your students to do that, that they're actually helping stimulate the hypothalamus in a particular way to release certain peptides or neurotransmitters that will induce these altered states?
Yes, of course. That's, you know, the morphological shift that I had alluded to earlier, I believe happens quite strongly through the endocrine system and these particular glands, the pituitary, the pineal, the hypothalamus, being stimulated. And you can stimulate these glands through energy work, through attention, through breathing, through meditation, to begin to secrete these hormones that do induce substances which will begin a morphological process of altering and changing your physiology to being able to heal yourself faster and to change your body so that your entire system begins to operate at a higher frequency, or maybe a light energy frequency. The whole endocrine system is really based on light energy, you know, kind of a crystal light type of frequency, so that the more you are inducing those glands to operate and output, then the more sensitive you become to light-based energies.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Otherwhere with guest medical intuitive and founder of the Academy of Intuition Medicine in California, Dr. Francesca McCartney, and myself, Liz Miller. Hope you're enjoying the show. is proudly brought to you by King Street Sounds, who've provided all the great music for the show tonight. Check them out on the web at www.kingstreetsounds.com. And you've just been listening to the very sweet vocal arrangements of Studio Apartments' We Are Lonely. A remix there from Quentin Harris, doing a fine job on production detail. We're coming up to the last segment of our interview with Francesca McCartney, who'll be giving us the lowdown on the changes occurring within the field of Western medicine as energy medicine becomes integrated with it, and what her plans and visions are for the future. BBS Radio.
It's becoming pretty obvious to me, and I think a lot of other people who are working in the fields of healthcare, that the medical profession, and in particular the allopathic medical profession, is going through quite a transformation. And really it makes a lot of sense, because as we all transform in our own lives individually, those of us who are involved in the field of healthcare would naturally transform the whole as a result. And I'm really interested in finding out what your views are when it comes to how you're perceiving the transformation that's going on as intuition medicine becomes integrated into Western or allopathic medicine.
Well, my view is that if you history, the practice that we now call allopathic or traditional medicine is comparatively new in our human history. But for the past 100 years or so, it has really been supported by a massive campaign for credibility, which has pushed out the other subtle healing arts, the energy medicine arts, that people like us benefit from so much. And I see that the reintegration of including spirit within healing is being asked for by many people, and that is what is pushing the traditional medicine, the allopathic medicine, to take note that it is time to go back, to reintegrate the role of spirit back into medicine and back into into medical care. And that people like us, many, many people are asking for this reintegration of spirit into health, and it is what I feel health is comprised of, and that true health is comprised of the wellness of not only the body and the mind, but also of the spirit.
Yes, it's a trend, isn't it, that we're all being swept up in, and it's this trend to spiritualize matter once again, or to remember. Well, actually, no, I really think it is actually a process of spiritualizing matter. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do use that phrase actually in my book, Spiritualizing Matter. And my feeling is that it is necessary at this point in our evolution as human beings and as spirits becoming more conscious of matter, that we are pushing awareness on all levels, on health, on politics, on medicine, to a point of ask everyone at every level to become more cognizant and responsible for the role of spirit in health, in medicine, and in the world. And I think there's a huge global trend that's happening that is waking people up to realize that there is a subtle part to our world which is very powerful and has a tremendous effect on everything and everyone. And that so many voices have banded together in such a way that people are paying attention. And here in the United States, one of the big moves has been for traditional medicine, allopathic medicine, to begin to include in medical school training the energy medicine arts as elective courses. And this was brought about mainly because of money. Loss of going out of the pockets of allopathic medical practitioners into the hands of energy medicine practitioners and alternative healing practitioners, And the industry, the medical industry has paid attention to that over the last decade and is now, because of public pressure, shifting their view and beginning to do studies on how to include energy medicine in the training of medical doctors. So I find that is a really positive and powerful step towards the inclusion of spirit in the healing arts and medicine.
And what are your visions for the future of medicine in general? Because you can see that there's some changes that are happening. How long do you think it will be before, as a society, as Western culture develops, how long do you think it'll be before it's really accepted in the mainstream that someone may come into your hospital room or to your bedside, do some energetic work on you, and for that to be completely normal?
Well, you know, Liz, that is happening already. It's happening in both here in where I live in California and in the Bay Area. There are programs within particular hospitals right around where we live, and they have programs which offer energy healers, medical intuitives, pastors, of course, spiritual counselors, acupuncturists, to come into the rooms of patients, if the patient requests it, and have them practice their subtle healing arts, their energy medicine arts. So it is already happening. It's probably across the United States happening officially in about a dozen hospitals. And I think that will grow exponentially and very quickly within the next decade. And it's going in that direction because we are all asking for it.
Well, I have a couple of different views on it. I think, yes, we are asking for it, but I'm very aware of some of the antics that go on with big pharmaceutical companies to keep people uneducated and to keep them dependent on pharmaceutical drugs and really traditional medicine or allopathic medicine, rather than looking at those other options. And, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, well, how much of this is actually being driven by fear on their behalf? How much of the acquiescence is actually going on? Because they're actually really being driven by the money that they're losing rather than the care for the patients themselves. And I know that that's a slightly negative viewpoint to take, but it's one that I think needs to be considered.
Well, I completely agree with you, but I'm coming from the point of view which says if it's fear that's driving them to make the change towards including spirit and subtle energy in their big business, then I'm all for it. I'm all for fear motivating the big pharmaceutical companies.
Well,
I've been reading all of that stuff about, you know, the bogus clinical trials that come out on particular drugs being suppressed, and the general public not really understanding that the drugs that they're taking can lead to possible death, and, you know, as well as disease in much more numbers than they're being told. But that information is coming out now for the first time that I believe I have ever seen it being written about. And I think people are beginning to read that information and demand that other choices be presented to them. I'm coming from an optimistic position. A realistic optimist is what I call myself.
Well,
with that point of view.
Well, we're lucky that you are, and the more people that can hold that view and remain optimistic, the better. What would you suggest that people do if they're having trouble finding the time, or even they might have the inclination, but they just still find that they're avoiding actually sitting down and doing the journaling or 5 minutes of meditation a day. Is there anything that you could suggest to people that might help them along?
Yes. First of all, I would really recommend if your listeners are interested in this dialogue that you and I are having, buy my book. Read my book. You don't have to do the exercises. You know, if you feel you don't have the time or whatever, if you read the book and you read the information, your intuitive senses will pick up the wisdom-based information that's being transmitted in the words. And then on a daily basis, you can just ask yourself, go inside, ask yourself, what should I practice today while I'm walking around in the world? Shall I practice saying hello to everybody as a spirit so I'm seeing more than just their body? Or shall I practice breathing and grounding to the earth all day long so that you make an active part? Or maybe I'll just walk around today and every time I have a negative thought, I will say an affirmation, one of the affirmations that was in Francesca's book, and erase the negative thought and replace it with an affirmative thought. Those are the types of things that ultimately are the best medicine for a person to practice. And, you know, the contemplation, sitting every day doing the meditation will create a deeper foundation. But, you know, for most people, if you can just change your attitude, shift the way you are operating in the world, operating in your body, and make that a living human part of who you are, then that's going to do a lot towards your healing and your health and your evolution.
One of the purposes for my radio show, or one of the missions that I personally have for it, is to provide a platform for people like yourself who are working in the metaphysical field and give them a platform to reach as many people as possible on an international level, which hopefully the show will do more and more as time goes along. And I like to spend time with each of my guests talking to them about their particular mission, and I know that we've touched on that many times during this interview, but I'd really love for you to actually state quite clearly what you see as your mission and how that in turn has rewarded you in your life.
My personal mission is to educate people in the art of energy and spiritual healing and bring this art into accepted mainstream society and into medical care. And I'm rewarded by this every day that I go into my classroom and I greet my students. They're a living testament to me that my mission is successful.
Do you have any other plans for later in your life besides the academy? I'm sure that you have, I'm sure you have many other interests besides your work with intuition medicine.
Well, professionally, we have in the works an expansion of the academy, and I hope it will be up and running this year, but we are expanding into a university, Energy Medicine University, where we will be offering education in energy medicine and awarding Master of Science in Energy Medicine and PhDs in Energy Medicine through a global, completely, fully distance education program. And we have 20 professors with 44 different courses focused on, four different specialty tracks, integral psychology, medical intuition, bioenergetics, organizational transformation, and intuitive counseling. So that's what's up for me in a professional realm, as well as I have a contract with New World Library to write a second book.
And is that book going to be about healing others?
We're still talking about it. Okay. But, you know, my book, Body of Health, covers 3 months of 3 years of training at the academy.
Really?
So it covers 3 months of the training. So a couple more years of information about the training.
If people would like to find out more about your work and they'd like to sign up for any of the courses that you're doing presently or in the future, how may they do that?
www.intuitionmedicine.org. I've got a great website with lots of information, and you can find my email there, and I'll happily email anyone back.
Francesca McCartney, PhD, thank you so much for appearing on Otherwhere today. It's been such an honor to speak with you, and it's been an incredibly enlightening experience for me, and I'm sure for the listeners as well.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Liz, and I really enjoyed speaking with you.
I wish you much success and joy on your journey, and I hope that we can speak with you once again.
maybe in a few months' time?
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks again.
Good health to you, Liz.
Good health to you.
Next week on the show, we'll be finding out what it's like to train with Dr. Masaru Emoto as a Hado practitioner and learn all about the amazing consciousness of water. If you haven't seen Dr. Emoto's book, The Messages in Water, yet, go and get one, because I think everyone needs to have their own copy. At the very least, have a look at the website at www.hado.net, that's H-A-D-O, and check out the picture gallery, as your eyes will be greeted with some of the most mesmerizing images of water crystals that you'll ever see. Each one of them is unique because each one is imprinted with a different frequency of consciousness. Anna Webb has recently completed Hado Instructor School training in Hawaii with Dr. Emoto. She'll be telling us all about Dr. Emoto's experiments demonstrating how water holds consciousness and the remarkable images of geometrical shapes that are captured in the water crystals. Find out what it is to be a Hado practitioner from one of the first to be certified, and hear how each one of us can use this information to enhance our relationship with water and help to not only purify the water in our bodies, but those of the earth herself. And before I go, check out bbsradio.com's new show schedule. The lineup of shows on this station is just getting bigger and better. My tips for some of the new shows are from Shari Edwards, whose Sound Health show is fabulous, Linda Moulton Howe's Earth Files, The Messenger with Carolyn Evers, Dr. Shelley Kerr has a show called Beyond Reality, and of course there's Dr. Bell's Health Science and Energy show, The Don and Wynn Show, and Dr. Turi's Starlight Radio. Have a listen to all of them. They're great. This week, the show is so crammed full, I don't have time for the guided visualization. So next week, we'll have an extra long journey into progressive yoga relaxation, and make sure that you join us for that. If you'd like to check out my bio page at bbsradio.com, just follow the links to Otherwhere from the bbsradio.com homepage. Archives are also being updated, so the last few shows should be able to be listened to soon. Have a fabulous week ahead, full of magic and miracles, and I'll see you back here same time next week.
We'll be right back.